When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Dory with you. Let me tell you a little bit about Michael Jauer, a Washington, D.C.-based writer, speaker, researcher. His expertise is the personality development area, body, mind, emotions, spirituality. He's the author with Mark Micozzi, MD, PhD, of a couple books, The Spiritual Anatomy of Emotion and Your Emotional Type. The latest book by Mr. Michael Jauer is Sensitive Soul, The Unseen Role of Emotion in Extraordinary States. And Michael, we have all gone through some emotional states over the past year, haven't we?
Oh my gosh.
Jeez.
We may just be getting started. I'm not sure.
I think so. Well, welcome to the program, and thanks for staying up so late for us.
It's a pleasure to be with you, George.
How did you get involved in this area?
Well, in a completely unlikely way, looking back about 25 years, I would have never guessed that I've gotten into researching and writing about the subject I have. It really got started when I was in the mid-1990s working in the commercial real estate industry and researching something called sick building syndrome, which is primarily office buildings, sometimes residential buildings, where people are in the buildings, they don't feel well, they get kind of cold and flu-type symptoms,
okay.
And when they're outside of the buildings, they feel much better. So the buildings seem to be the culprit. The question is why? And working with an association of building owners and managers, I was tasked with working with folks with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to develop guidance to prevent sick buildings and keep people well, and then sort of develop protocols for what you do if, you know, if you're a building manager, engineer, and there is something like this, a situation like this. And I started speaking with a variety of people, obviously the building managers and engineers to begin with, but ultimately the building occupants and folks who were sidelined because of these symptoms. And they told me that in many cases they had been sensitive to various things in their environment years before, which raised the question just what might be going on here. Is the building ultimately the problem, or could it be an interaction between the building and the person? And I became aware, as people started to confide in me, in a couple of more esoteric conditions. One is called multiple chemical sensitivity, where people are highly reactive to things like perfumes and colognes and paints and pesticides.
Right.
So that's, you know, that was kind of interesting. And then some people told me about their electrical sensitivity, feeling like they were influenced by and influenced electrical appliances, lights and computers especially. And then the kicker was that some of these folks, as I had sort of more ongoing conversations and more ultimately confidential the individuals anyway, was the fact that they had experienced things like apparitions and could see energies around people, and that they felt this was a pronounced form of sensitivity, emotional, primarily, that they'd had for many years. So that sort of piqued a lot of questions, and the study and writing I've done ever since really sprang from that.
These buildings that helped create the sick building syndrome, were like asbestos and chemicals in the building, things like that?
Yeah, asbestos, not so much. It's really sort of mold in buildings is a big trigger, is a big factor. You know, people have mold in their homes as well. It's sort of endemic, or can be. And one thing, George, that sort of tipped me off that this is a sort of interesting path to research is that at that same time, my wife and I had moved into a new house, which is where I'm speaking to you from, and we were working. We had a sort of shared office, and it turned out there was mold in that room. Now, my wife has been asthmatic since she was born, unfortunately, and mm-hmm. she would react immediately to this.
Right, right.
I could be in that room simultaneously and just sort of be aware that there's kind of a musty odor, not be really put off by it. And so I had a very clear example of different people reacting differently in a room that could be considered sick, and we obviously had that remedied very quickly. But this was happening all at the same time, so it sort of gelled.
And then you somehow got into the emotional end of all this, too, which is amazing.
Yeah, I became convinced, and am convinced, and have written about this extensively, that sensitivity, when you consider that term, there's a physical side to it where people are, you know, allergic in many cases. I think migraine is a good example of physical sensitivities, but simultaneously emotional sensitivities, and allergy and migraine are probably good examples of that. When people are riled up, when they are stressed, they're certainly more likely to get colds or infections. Their allergies kick in. My wife's asthma can be worsened by emotional stress. And migraine is set off by all kinds of things. Most people think of it, you know, in terms of smells and glare and noise and things like that, which is certainly true. But the primary trigger for most people is emotion. So it's very difficult to separate out emotion from you know, physical prompts. They sort of are all wrapped up in one, and that's, again, what I've tried to explore quite a bit.
How did you get to know the poltergeist investigator, William Rohl? How did that happen?
That also sprang, interestingly enough, from my work on indoor air quality. I was, again, this is back in the probably mid to late 1990s, getting interested in these subjects. And I've always had an interest in parapsychology as well. There are some experiences I've had in my family or my family has had, and I think some of this may actually be genetic as well. Anyway, that was kind of in the back of my mind, especially when I was talking to people who'd been affected by so-called sick buildings or sick building syndrome, and they told me they had these sort of pre-existing sensitivities and particular proclivities towards paranormal perception. And I was speaking at a small conference on indoor air quality in the Atlanta area, and I remembered that Bill Rohl, who was a renowned and still, you know, very noteworthy poltergeist investigator, was in the Atlanta region. So I sent him a letter, called him up, and he very graciously agreed to meet with me. And so we were kicking these things around, and one thing that struck me, George, at the time was that Bill Rohl's assistant had all the cluster of symptoms and complaints that I had been talking with these folks in the sick building context about, the very same one.
Jeez.
Migraine, she was allergic, she saw apparitions, she felt vibrations in rooms and so forth, and Bill told me something that I've never forgotten. He said, if you go back to the 19th century, in the turn of the 20th century, when parapsychology was in vogue and mediums were all the rage, he said they weren't really called mediums, they were called sensitives, and they were known as sensitives. And so that really put me 100% on sort of this concept of sensitivity, and Bill subsequently suggested, why don't you do a survey to try to systematize the data that you're getting, the stories that you're getting from people, change them from anecdotes into actual data, ask particular questions, and see what you come up with. And so that led to the publication of a survey in the Journal of the Society of Psychical Research, the group out of the UK that has a very illustrious pedigree going back to the late 1800s, William James, and I think the Arthur Conan Doyle was
right.
Sherlock Holmes was a member, and so forth. So I was thrilled to get published by them. That was my first paper, and went through that whole process. And I believe the findings stand up to this day, and that's a lot of what I've written about.
When you wrote the book Sensitive Soul, the new book that's just come out, tell me about the title. That's I find it to be very clever, but tell me its meaning.
Right. So sensitive refers to the fact that each of us is a sensate being. You know, we have to be sensitive to make sense out of our environment.
Mm-hmm.
So our senses and emotions provide a key to that. Emotions tell us how we're feeling, you know, how we are in any given environment. Is this relationship right or wrong for me? So sensitivity is, again, both physical and emotional and kind of orients us as individuals. Soul refers to our spiritual capacity, which I also argue is very much tied to emotion, to feeling. The feelings we have for one another, for our pets, for nature, you know, for things that are going on in the world. You mentioned, you know, recent events. Everybody gets riled up over those. You know, all of this underlies, in my opinion, our spirituality, fellow feeling, the feeling that we have for other people in this life. And I think the deeper our feeling, the deeper our spirituality. So you put those two together, and that's my concept of sensitive soul.
I'm fascinated by the concept of deja vu, that feeling that you know something's going to happen or you've been there before. How does that equate into sensitive soul?
Ooh, I have the glimmer of a feeling that you've asked me this question before. Just kidding.
And you've been on before. No, your first time.
Hasn't happened, but deja vu is remarkable because so many of us have, you know, experienced deja vu, and it's quite striking.
It's a weird feeling. It's a very weird sensation.
It's like you're between this and that, and it's this faint, you know, sense that I've been here before, this has happened before. Doing some sort of time travel, and there are all kinds of proposed explanations for it. Interestingly enough, there is no single accepted, you know, sort of mainstream explanation of deja vu. But there's an explanation that I particularly have been drawn to, and that I write about in the new book, and that is that it very well may relate to being in a situation where you're reminded of something that did happen before in your life, and there's some cue in the environment that tips you off to that. And so you start to remember, and it's sort of unconscious. And at the same time, there was something in that memory that's unpleasant or that your unconscious doesn't want to fully realize and bring into the present. And so it shuts it off. And I've experienced this myself. In one situation where, you know, reflecting on it, I thought, oh, that's probably what was going on. And I think that at least it was a satisfying explanation for me.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it could explain many other, maybe not all, instances of deja vu, but I think that the subconscious is at work, and the subconscious typically is responsible for a lot more of our experience and our perception than we give it credit for.
And the experience, you can feel it coming on, can't you?
Yes, it's eerie in that way. It absolutely
yeah.
is. It sort of dawns on you. The impression dawns on you, and then you don't quite have the full appreciation for it. You're not really sure what you're on the cusp of, and then it goes away.
Is there anything supernatural to it? I've got a friend who's a doctor, and he thinks it's like some kind of frontal lobe epilepsy. So he goes the medical way. I'd rather go the more supernatural way.
Well, like I say, there are a lot of explanations for it. If folks go on to go online, there are, and YouTube, for example, there are many very very well presented explanations. And neurologically, there's a lot going on. There's a lot to unpack. I happen to like this particular explanation because it seemed to explain a very striking instance of deja vu that I had. And again, I'm sort of predisposed to look into the unconscious. And when you talk about the supernatural, I think the unconscious has a lot to do with what we talk about as supernatural, and it's, a lot of it is out of our awareness, which is why it seems so eerie.
You talk about PTSD, and you say there are a couple types of PTSD. Explain that.
Yes, this is one of the more surprising, perhaps, outcomes of my research. I just thought there's one kind of PTSD, which is the typical, when people think of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, they think of sort of the flashbulb memory. You know, there's a veteran of Vietnam or Iraq and
right, Afghanistan, all that.
Afghanistan, yeah. And of course, people that have gone through a natural disaster or some sort of trauma where someone has threatened them, is life-threatening emergency, and again, something in the environment, almost like deja vu. There's something in the environment that triggers this recollection. And, you know, it could be a car backfiring and the person feels like they're back on the battlefield.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, all of the smells, all the sights, all the sound, all the fears come rushing back and they're overwhelmed and they can't tell left from right. And that's the flashbulb form of PTSD. What I discovered is that in the last 5 to 7 years, there's been research into what's called a dissociative form of PTSD, which affects between, I think the numbers are 15% to 30% of people that have it. And dissociation is the term for when you are sort of at a distance from your feelings, and it's sort of automatic and it kicks in. It's what I think is happening in deja vu. What happens for this percentage of people with PTSD is, again, there's something that prompts the recollection, but this mechanism kicks in, dissociation, and they can't really grasp it. They just feel like something is amiss, and sort of the opposite of the flashbulb type of PTSD, they can't really visualize or crystallize what it is that's bothering them, and it sort of feels like a funk or walking through, you know, fog, and it goes on, and they can't really get out of it, and this is the dissociative form of PTSD, and it relates, in my estimation, I think there's good evidence for this, it relates to two personality types, George, or at least two ends of a personality spectrum, and two very pronounced and very different reactions to a situation. What they had in mm-hmm. common was, you know, something that provoked great fear and anxiety once upon a time, but two very different reactions and two different forms of PTSD.
You know, and different people, as you say, react to it in different ways. But some people who have been on the battlefield never get PTSD.
No, that's right, most people do not, in natural disasters as well, but there are a heck of a lot of people that do, and that raises the larger question, you're very shrewd to point this out, is that most people don't, and so that's the initial question, why do some people get PTSD and others not, and then, of course, why do some people suffer from this sort of variation of it? And again, it relates, I think, to a broad spectrum of personality and, in some sense, how people are wired, especially emotionally, what registers with them. And I come back to the term sensitivity. I think some people are prone or primed, in effect, to be traumatized, and they may not know it, but it's just kind of how they are. And other people they're much more resilient, and they can walk away from something that would affect somebody else quite severely.
One of our favorite guests, Dean Radin, wrote a nice little snippet for you about your book on the back cover. He says, a fascinating tour of the hidden influences that make us who we are and that hold the clues to some truly extraordinary abilities. And he knows what he's talking about, Michael.
He does. Dean is a great guy, and he's been studying far more than I have over a longer period of time. And Dean's one of the people that I've leaned on. I've been very fortunate in writing these books to work with some terrific people. The co-author of my first two books, Mark McCosey, knows a heck of a lot about integrative healthcare and really the way we can consider people holistically, and that outlook has really helped me to sort of come along and put the pieces together.
It's an amazing work. We're going to talk more about your work. You even get into animals, don't you?
Quite a bit, much more, again, than I ever thought I would. They're all around us, and they're mammals like we are, so there's a lot that we can observe about our own functioning in our pets and our animal friends.
When we take calls next hour with folks, if anybody has had some emotional episodes, how do you feel comfortable with them sharing that with you?
Yes, absolutely. Nothing should be out of bounds, absolutely, positively.
And since you started putting this together, what have you concluded about people that in terms of how their emotions differ from different people, how people react to stress, how people don't? Is there a common barometer here or denominator?
Yeah, this is going to sound odd, but our commonality is our diversity. We are all human beings, but there are no two people who truly see the world and experience the world identically. Maybe if they're identical twins. Maybe. I'm not even so sure on that.
That's true.
But everybody's different. We see this in our political environment in the last many months and weeks. People get affected by different things and experience things very differently. But to me, emotion is the bottom line. Emotion is what drives us. It's the source of our strength in the world, our animation, our energy to get up and do things. It's what we, you know, feel moved about. That's emotion.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern. And go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light.
With the first pick in the NFL Draft.
Catch all 7 rounds, 3 days, live from Detroit. April 25th to 27th with NFL Network Draft coverage presented by Verizon and on ABC, ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and streaming on NFL Plus. It all starts Thursday, April 25th at 8 p.m. Eastern. Visit NFL.com/draft for more information.